We did the Om. And then the loving kindness practice, those phrases. I know many, if not all of you, have worked with those phrases. That is a kind of mantra too. It's a repetition, right? It's a training for the mind. So the word mantra, it's a training for the mind. Man is a part that's from the Sanskrit word manas, which means mind, and it's the part of the mind that's in particular related to our volitional, like when we're willing things or doing things. So mantra, a training of the mind. Isn't that beautiful that we can do a training of the mind? So helpful to train the mind. I don't know, maybe your mind's naturally trained and you don't need any, but I think it's really helpful to train our minds because because things are like they are. So I've been teaching, and I think I was here 2 weeks ago with you all, and I was teaching that week also from this book called You Are Here by Thich Nhat Hanh. This week, I'm basing the talk from a chapter in this book called Cultivating True Love and Four Mantras. Cultivating True Love, Four Mantras. So Thich Nhat Hanh in this chapter gives us four mantras, which I'm going to give them right now. So remember, a mantra is a training for the mind. It's a phrase or a word that you repeat to train the mind and heart. So I know in our lineage we don't think too much about mantras, but I know some of the monastics, the monks, might offer us to use Budo as a mantra, meaning awakened or awake, Budo. And then we have our Brahmavihara phrases. Those are mantra too, because we're repeating them. We're asking our mind to come back to them again and again. And it's a training. We could think of a mantra as having two aspects in its training. The first aspect is to focus the mind. Now, I'm not talking about focusing the mind as the kind of like, I'm going to squinch my face up and pull my shoulders up and try really hard to focus. I'm talking about the kind of focus that, I don't know, did you ever like accidentally read a book through most of the night? Did that ever happen to you? Like you get so caught up in it, so focused? Or if you play music, that can happen for people sometimes, or out in nature, or doing actually even on their aspects or types of meditation where you focus the mind, where the mind becomes so steady because it's interested and engaged in what it's doing. So mantras have two functions broadly. The first being this kind of training of focusing the mind. Concentrating the mind, or these words, focus and concentration, carry some overlay maybe from our educational system. I might even use the word absorption, right? We're absorbing the mind. And so that's the first function of a mantra. The second function of the mantra is to actually teach us, right? To teach us. So it's a little different than the loving kindness. For example, the loving kindness phrase, may I be safe or may you be safe. It's not about so much about manifesting that in the outer world. It's about teaching my heart to be open and to have that kind of well-wishing for myself or for another person. So it's a little different than a manifestation sort of thing that you might repeat because you're trying to get it to happen in the outer world. The mantra is a training for our own understanding, our own learning. So Sylvia Boorstein, I know some of you might know her. She has this wonderful meditation mantra. So it's a training. So we focus our mind and then we learn from it that she offers, which is, may I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. And you could use that in the meditation too. And I love that one because it gives me instructions right in the moments, right? Like that sort of training for the mind. So these two functions of mantra to help us focus or absorb. and to actually help us understand. So back to this chapter that I'm teaching from tonight. Thich Nhat Hanh gives us four mantras. The first one, I think these are so beautiful. That's why I'm gonna read them to you. The first one is, Dear One, I am here for you. Dear One, I am here for you. So these four mantras are in relationship to another person. I actually think all of our training, even our meditation training, we think we're just like by ourselves, but all of our training is about our relationship to ourself, our relationship to the people around us, our relationship to this world. So our practice is a training in a relationship, our intimacy. I think Mary Kelly was using that word earlier, right? Intimacy. So these four mantras, which he puts in this chapter entitled Cultivating True Love. Now, he's not talking about romantic love, the cultivation of true love. He's not talking about romantic love. This is sort of, I would say this is bigger than romantic love. This is deeper, maybe. This is that from which everything springs, I might say, or that sense of unconditional love, or metta might be a way, if you've studied and practiced metta, this aspect of the open-heartedness. So cultivating true love with these four mantras. So, dear one, I am here for you is the first one. And we could say this to ourselves. Maybe if you're having like a really hard day or a really hard moment, doesn't even have to be as long as a day, just a really hard moment, or you're spinning about the election or so, or this or that, like so many things. There's a million things to get caught up in. And so this mantra, this training to focus the mind and to teach us is, Dear One, I am here for you. Okay, the second one is, Dear One, I know that you are here alive, and that makes me very happy. Ah, this is so amazing. Like it said, imagine if you said this to your friend, right? Like it's, I've been experimenting with this. It makes people smile so much, right? Dear one, I know that you are here alive, and that makes me very happy. And then the third one, Dear one, I know that you are suffering. That's why I am here for you. That's an aspect of compassion, right? Dear one, I know that you are suffering. That's why I am here for you. And we could say this not just to someone outside, but to our own hearts when we are suffering. And then the fourth one, I don't know. I think everybody would have ones that are a little more challenging, right? Because these are teachings or learnings for us. This fourth one for me, maybe for you too. Dear one, I am suffering. I need your help. Dear one, I am suffering. I need your help. So I was teaching on this yesterday morning, and someone said she was at work this week, and she was talking with a coworker of hers who's got two young children, elementary school age. I think they're twins or something. And she needed to make for her kids 500 candy apples, caramel apples. Can you imagine? That might be her hyperbole because this is my friend telling me anyway. So, but anyway, she had to make some huge, crazy amount of caramel apples for the kids this week. And she said there was no way that was going to get done. And she had a neighbor who was retired and had a little more time on her hands, and she asked her neighbor to help her make the candied apples, right? So this dear one, I am suffering. Well, maybe the woman was just suffering over stress, like how am I going to make all these candy caramel apples, right? So like ask for help. Sometimes it's really, you know what happens when we ask for help? We often get it, and it makes more connection. Because then the neighborhood in this little story, right? Like the neighborhood, like there's more connection, more closeness, right? Isn't that true? When we offer help to someone, we feel more connected. And then when we receive help too. Okay, so these four mantras as practices, as teachings for us, as something that we can repeat, something that we can repeat and practice with. So that it grows stronger in our own experience. Because you know what? Our hearts can blossom. They can. Has this happened to you? Have you seen it in yourself? My little niece, my niece is, I think she's 10, maybe 9, 9 or 10, and I haven't seen her since she was 4 or 5. And she didn't remember meeting me ever. They live on the East Coast. I live in California. I don't get over there too much, clearly. And so when I first showed up, I went for a visit this summer. She hadn't met me before in her mind, right? She didn't have any memory of me. And I could tell she was a little like just a little guarded. She wasn't sure, like, who is this person, this strange person they tell me I'm related to, kind of feeling I got from her. And so I sat with her and asked her questions about her life. I gave her attention, and I could really see her blossom and open up. And this is such a small little example of, right, of how we can bloom like a flower. With attention, with love. I mean, how do we show people we love that we love them? We give them our attention. And in that attention, we can bloom and shift and change. I have a funny story about my cat, and I'm going to tell it because I love cat stories. So, my cat, this was probably 3 years ago, somebody dropped him in the woods by our house. So I live on 25 acres and there's just two other neighbors. So it's very isolated. We're 4 miles down a dirt road. It's rural. We're like in the middle of a redwood forest. And somebody dropped him in the woods here. And he was probably 7 months old at the time. And it was him and another cat, another kitten got dropped off. And I was like, oh my gosh, this cat. And so I started feeding it, and I was feeding it every day for 3 months, and I would sing to it. Every time I'd feed him, I'd sing to him. Just like little, like little eating your cat food songs or whatever. I was showing love, right? I was showing love. And this cat was so afraid, so fearful. It was very skinny. Poor guy, Tiger. He ends up being called Tiger. He didn't, nobody had taught him how to hunt. So he was hunting some, but he wasn't able to hunt enough food for himself because he was young. Anyway, so 3 months of feeding Tiger, singing to him, offering him love, and I thought, well, he's gonna be just an outdoor cat because he's so afraid. And then one day, 3 months in, he let me pet him, and the next day he sat on the couch. He came inside and sat on the couch with me. And I'm telling you, this is the power of love, right? Like the power of being present. Dear one, I know that you are suffering. I am here for you. So, Tiger was a little aggressive, still can be a little aggressive. He was a biter, and he hasn't bitten me in ages. And I put that to the fact of this continued like love bombing him all the time. The kitty cat, the love bombing the kitty cat. And he hasn't bitten me in months. I should knock on wood though, but he hasn't bitten me in months, right? From this sense of really opening up with love. And again, we could tell a story like it's just a cat that's different than a human being, but is it that different than with a human being? I'm not sure. It's completely different, right? Like our hearts can bloom, and love is indispensable to life. Our heart can and can and will expand. We can, with practice, grow out of resentment from our family, from our childhood, right? We can, with practice, with this training, maybe working with the loving kindness phrases with the difficult person, we can teach ourselves with this mantra, the training, we can teach ourselves to grow out of resentments. And that this first mantra, dear one, I am here for you, it is a true declaration, it's a declaration of love. I am here for you. Because that's how we show our love. We show up. We are present. We can give the gift of presence, the gift of really mindfulness. I might even use that word, right? Of having the body and the mind here in the same place at the same moment, and how powerful that and healing that can be. Mantra. Okay, so here's another story. So I was talking to my husband about this topic of mantra and asking for little stories. Like, what's the little story about a mantra that's really helpful for you? And he said that when I travel, so I go down to the Bay Area a lot to teach. I go down there and to teach. And he said that he'll get really worried about me while I'm gone. I'm on the highways down there, which are not like the highways up here. You know, it's just like he gets afraid of me being down there and worried about my safety. And he said, when that happens, and instead of letting his mind go down the drain of worry, you're familiar with that, right? Going down the drain of worry. Instead of letting his mind go down the drain of with worry, he substitutes and he does the metta phrases. He switches his mind. It's a training, right? May Ashley be safe. May she be healthy. And he said that it's not, because I questioned him closely on this, and he said that it's not about me actually coming to no harm or right. It's about protecting his mind from going down the drain into fear and worry. Isn't that beautiful? That is, I would say that's wise action and wise speech. We could put mantra in the category of wise speech. We could speak mantra aloud, and like with these mantras that Thich Nhat Hanh has given us. And we can speak mantra in our own mind and heart. It's a kind of wise speech and a kind of wise action too. So life, with all of its miracles, is here. This is a Thich Nhat Hanh quote. Life, with all of its miracles, is here. And among those miracles is the person before you, the person before you, the one that you love. Have you all heard Jack Kornfield talk about mindfulness as kind attention? Right? Have you heard that before from him or other teachers? So, this quality of attention that is mindfulness, that is the body and the mind centered in the present moment, has in it, embedded in it, like sugar has sweet, has kindness in it, has, I would even go so far as to say, love in it. So the person who is in front of you, if you're present with them, you're offering your open-heartedness. I'm not talking about Hallmark romantic love. It doesn't always feel that way. It could be very just simple and direct. Like, today I was driving home and I was stopped to get my mail out of the mailbox, and this woman came up, and I felt like she came up to say something to me, and I felt like she was so present with me, like I could see in her eyes, right? And it was just like this little moment. I never met her before, but she was right in front of me, right? And there was a present, like we were both present, and I could feel that connection, that intimacy. So life, with all of its miracles, is here, and among those miracles is the person before you, the one you love. When people are appreciated, so when we appreciate people this way with our presence and with our language, with these mantras, when people are appreciated in this way, and when they're embraced by the mindful attention of us or of someone else, they will open and bloom. And then again from Thich Nhat Hanh, in order to love, we must be here. And then our presence will embrace the presence of the other person. I mean, what a beautiful gift to be able to do that. And what a beautiful gift to be able to have these mantras. Say, maybe your mind is going down the drain. Just imagine a bathtub and our mind's going down the drain of worry about what's going to happen this week with the election and like all these different stories that we tell ourselves and we don't know. It's speculation at this point. And what can you do? What is your wise action to protect your mind from that kind of spiraling into fear and worry? Maybe it could be mantra, could be another tool for you to use, one of these mantras. Or it could be, of course, doing a meditation practice or a yoga practice or going in nature, like all these different wise action, wise effort kind of things for ourselves. So our bodies, your body, my body, our minds, our bodies, they're sustained by the entire cosmos. The clouds in the sky, they nourish us. The light of the sun nourishes us. The cosmos offers us vitality and love in every moment. Really, without the sky, you would not be here. It's darker early now, as of today, and we can see the stars maybe more clearly and let ourselves be nourished by those stars. Okay, so then I just got this book by Sebane Selassie. Oh, you can't see because it's backwards. It's called You Belong by Sebane Selassie. And she says, so this is from just the first chapter called, and the chapter is entitled Nothing is Separate. And she says, according to physicist Alan Lightman, 14 billion years ago, everything in our known universe, okay, so everything in our known universe, the space, the matter, energy, all of it was contained into a volume, so into a space. I'm making a little space, but it's really even littler than that. So everything, 14 billion years ago, everything in our known universe was contained in a volume 1 million billion billion times smaller than a single atom. So all the atoms in you and all the atoms in me and all the atoms in all the trees and the forests over the whole earth were contained in a volume 1 million billion billion times smaller than a single atom. All the cells in your body are made of atoms. Every single atom in your body is traceable to that teeny tiny teensy point. I mean, holy cannoli. It's really amazing. Okay, every breath you breathe contains an average of 10 sextillion atoms. Okay, so she defines 10 sextillion atoms. That's a one followed by 22 zeros. So every breath, how many breaths have happened since we started, right, our meeting an hour and a little bit more ago? There are as many atoms in a single molecule of your DNA as there are stars in a galaxy. Almost all of the mass in an atom is made up from the protons and neutrons in the nucleus. If the nucleus of an atom were the size of a grain of rice, the rest of the atoms surrounding it would be the area of a football stadium. Oh my God. If you were to place all the atomic nuclei of your body side by side, they would amount to a speck of dust. I mean, she goes on. It's pretty fabulous, right? Like this stuff that we forget. We get really caught up in our preoccupations and worries, and we forget actually how much we're nourished by this beautiful universe and how much of a great vast mystery it is. So being present, I would love to hear what you all think about this. I wonder if you think this is true. Being present is the practice of love. And the foundation of love is the energy of mindfulness. So the foundation of love is this energy of mindfulness. Because really, how can you love anybody if you're not present? You just can't. So we have so many perceptions all of the time. Some of them are false. We could also, instead of using the word perceptions, we could use the word view. Like we have so many views, our beliefs, our stories. All of the time, and not all of them are true. Do you believe me? Don't believe everything you think. I think that would be my favorite bumper sticker. Don't believe everything you think, because not everything you think is true. So we have so many false perceptions. Maybe the fourth mantra, dear one, I am suffering. I need your help. Maybe you have the view that it's wrong or bad to ask for help, right? And then that can get in the way, and you might get increased suffering because of that. So we shouldn't trust our perceptions too much. We shouldn't trust our thoughts, our stories too much. It's not that we're gonna not have thoughts and stories. It's not that we're going to necessarily stop having preferences, but there's something about not holding on to them too tightly. We could ask ourselves, are you sure? Are you sure? Is that really true? So you have made mistakes here and there, probably once or twice, and I have made mistakes only maybe once. Like, I don't know. Anyway, so it's fine. We've all made mistakes. And then very often, our suffering and pain is born from wrong perceptions, from these stories we tell ourselves. Like, oh, like we might tell ourselves, like, somebody did something, and they meant it as a terrible insult. I'm trying to think of a story. Like maybe I could probably think of something about Joe, but I didn't run my husband. I didn't run it by him, right? But maybe he did something and I thought, oh my God, he's just so thoughtless and he really meant to hurt me, right? Or whatever sort of unconscious, it might not even bubble up to full consciousness, right? But there's like a view or a perception that this was done to me as a personal thing. And that's maybe true, but maybe not, right? So much suffering comes from our false perceptions. Like if we're having a disagreement, or I'm having a disagreement with someone, a friend or a loved one, I might say to them, as Thich Nhat Hanh recommends, dear one, I am suffering. Can you help me? What did you mean when this thing happened or when you said this thing? Instead of just letting myself go down the bathtub drain and back to the bathtub drain, instead of going down the bathtub drain again, stopping and using this mantra, like, I'm suffering. Can you help me? Can you help me understand? Can you help me clear up my perceptions? It's really actually quite helpful to have each other when we're suffering, to help us clear up our misperceptions, because we suffer from them. Some people, we can carry our misperceptions to our death, and that can cause so much suffering and misfortune. We might think so many things that are not actually 100% accurate. I mean, I think with the political stuff too. You know, last week, those of you that were here, I know Heidi was talking about that sense of clinging to our views. Like, whatever happens this week, like it probably, I mean, it could be really bad, but that is just a story, right? Nothing's 100% one way or another. And that idea of really clinging to it. I wonder if that makes sense, holding tight to it. Like, is it true? Is it necessarily true? We don't know because it's not happened yet. We're right here. We're in, actually, right now, we're in such a space of uncertainty, aren't we? We're in such a space of uncertainty. And it's hard sometimes. I know for me, my mind sometimes would prefer to have a certain horrible outcome than not know. Like the uncertainty, like my mind will just make up a certain story because the uncertainty is uncomfortable. I wonder if your mind is like that too. Because there's, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So we're in a place of uncertainty right now. I mean, we always are because we can't know the future. There's so many different causes and conditions that come together at any one time to make any one moment. And what we can do is in the moment, right? In the present moment, tend to our own hearts. Do what needs to be done in the world and practice, not a perfect practice, letting go. Like we could ask ourselves, is that true? Is that true? Maybe, maybe not. Let it go, let it go, let it go. All right, my friends, that is what I have for you this evening. I would love to hear any comments or questions, anything that you know. Any comments or questions? And you can, let's see, Patty's raised her hands. Yes, Patty.
I feel like you channeled Wes Nisker and Carl Sagan tonight with all your talk about how small we are in this huge universe. And I thank you for that because that's a great perspective to be reminded of. And that's all I had to say. I just felt the presence of Carl Sagan and Wes Nisker. And I thank you for that
Thank you.
perspective.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe they're here with us. I mean, they are here with us actually in some ways, right? Because they're in your heart. And maybe, you know, it's also this time of year. I'll go a little woo-woo now. I'm going to go out on a woo-woo limb and say right now the veil, it's supposed to be thin between the worlds right now, and the ancestors are here with us. The ancestors are here with us. Let's see, Sherry and Bowman.
There we go. That talk was really great. And thank you. I really needed to hear that. You know, when you said, "Help me, dear, I'm suffering." So I had surgery about a week ago, and I need help with everything, and I can't stand it. You know, my daughter and son-in-law came over today, and I was trying to help them move the couch with one leg on a knee scooter, and I'm beating my
Oh.
husband is yelling at me, "What are you doing?" You know, and it's really been a challenge, you know, for me to ask for help because I have this, you know, belief back here that that's a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an imposition, a burden on people. And that's such a lie because when Bowman asks me for help, there's not enough I can do for him. But for some reason, I have this conditioned, you know, thing about, so this last 2 weeks has been a real opportunity to practice. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Ashley.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Let's see, Deborah. You have to unmute yourself, dear.
I've been bathing in your words. I just love them. I love our heart can bloom, and love is indispensable to life, and our body and mind in the same place at the same time. I just absolutely love that. And the last things that you said about the, I had to, so some of us, like me, we have trouble trusting ourselves. I had a therapist say to me back in the 90s, she said, trust yourself. And so it's interesting to walk that line of, am I being reactive? Is this an old reactivity? Or should I listen to my innate wise woman who's living in my midsection? And can I do that, trust myself, a trust that, I'm intelligent or sensitive or hypersensitive or whatever all the attributes are, and just trust that, even if it's not right for somebody else, I'm me, not anybody else. But also keep this open mind of inquiry and wonder what could really be going on with that other person. Why is that happening? And I kind of shared this a couple weeks ago, actually, when Heidi was talking. But what do I have to do about it if I just am taking care of my own safety in this moment or in this particular situation? Can I just trust myself and not think ill or fear or any of that kind of thing about that other being? So to me, that's kind of like a work that's always in progress. It can deepen and grow, as you were saying, and it's kind of the middle path. Can I be spacious over here, even though I really want to run away and never talk to you again, never see you again? Or I want to get my bataka bat out and hit you over the head. Do you all remember the foam bataka bats therapists had about 40 years ago or something? Yeah, so that's it. So thank you, as always. Just fabulous. And so my solution for Tuesday night is a bottle of Prosecco with a couple of neighbors and renewing my passport in case I have to leave the nation under certain circumstances.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah. Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank
Yeah. And then Marion, let's hear from you. Marion, yeah.
I just can't get the hand to raise. I'm sorry. So my
That's
own.
fine. Yeah,
Okay.
that works.
I am having a very difficult time. I am suffering, and I just can't sit here and listen to the wonderful things you're saying and not say anything. And I'm not sure what to say, except that I'm progressively getting much sicker, and the doctor uses the word deformed, and not being able to stand at some point, stand up my feet. And I don't know, I'm doing so much metta and I'm doing my best. And I'm doing better than I would have thought without everybody here and without Buddhism. But I'm going to use the phrases because it's scary. And I wanted to show, I don't know if this can be seen. It's a picture of me that I always go to when I feel like it's me when I was, I think, two. When she needs love, I go to the picture and try to give
Can
it.
you sh we see it?
Oh,
Can
I'm
you
going to
show it
hold
a
it.
little bit? Oh, yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
No budget. Is
Yeah.
that okay?
Yeah, we can see. Thank you.
Very
Thank
sad.
you. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear. It's no joke in this human body. Sometimes it's no joke. And may you be held in compassion. Thank you.
I just feel better if I say something.
Yeah, thank you for telling us. It's important for us to know, for us to hold each other. I mean, that's why we do the metta phrases at the end, isn't it? So that we can hold each other.
It just gets pretty tiring every week.
Yes. Yes. Yes.